Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we started this podcast because we believe that it isn't the female celebrity making waves in this world. It's the moms, the ones who are tending to their toddlers while advocating for social change or nursing their babies while creating breathtaking art. We invite you to this conversation because we're talking about you. Lest you've forgotten this about yourself, you are rocking the cradle and throwing together peanut butter and jelly, or almond butter, or sun butter and jelly, or driving your kids around in a minivan and loving your neighbors and your friends. You may not always believe it to be true, but you have the power to make the world around you a better place. We believe this to the core. You've got a ferocious mama bear inside, and that tender way that you love on your kids, it's the same energy with which you can spread your sunshine in your neighborhood, your community, your world, in the biggest and smallest ways.
Amen. Amen. So, Leslie, today we have a really just genuinely lovely guest on the show. Our friend and the author of a new book called Bearing Hope, Navigating the Desert of Waiting for a Child, Liv Ryan, is on the show. And it's such a great conversation. I know, it's such a great conversation. But before we jump in, Leslie, it's your birthday. We're going to party like it's your birthday. We're going to sip a coffee it's your birthday. So your birthday is at the end of the week. I know you. You're already celebrating, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I love my birthday. I love all birthdays. My love for birthdays in general, it's kind of over the top. I'm just grateful to be alive. I'm grateful that my people are around me, and I am soaking it up all week long.
Yes, you and I are both huge fans of birthdays. So what does that look like for you over there, though?
I think little indulgences all week long. I'll probably allow myself, you know, to go through the coffee shop a couple times this week and not feel guilty about it. I'll definitely go for runs, as Kathy, our guest Kathy, reminded me. I don't jog, I run, ladies. So I'll go for runs in the middle of the day and I won't feel guilty about it. And just basically celebrate without the guilt.
I love it. So this is your one day a year where you just release all the guilt. Is that what you're saying?
Apparently it's the one. And I let it go. I let it spread throughout the week. But yeah, I guess I just let it go this week. And I'm also really excited because Saturday we'll be celebrating with extended family at a wedding in St. Louis. And so I can't wait to shake it up on the dance floor. I'm really excited.
Yeah, St. Louis, just get ready for all the finger guns. It'll be the joy heard around the city. You and your finger gun dancing.
I'm bringing it.
So, any birthday wishes? What do you guys do for gifts? I can't remember.
Well, we love giving the kids presents on their birthdays, but usually there's only, you know, maybe a few things that I have my eye out that I might ask for my birthday. But honestly, this year, I just want my family to clean out my minivan. I want the garbage out. I want the dust removed from the dashboard. I want the outside to sparkle. That's it. I just want a clean car. So my expectations is here. That really, it's all I want in the world. A clean car that I don't have to clean myself.
Oh, that is so funny. I just feel like as we get older, our expectations get sexier and sexier.
Isn't that the truth?
So Jake, I know you're listening. Take note. Make it happen for her. You know what? You didn't mention it, but I know that you would want it for your birthday gift. I feel like you would really, really want an iTunes review for your birthday gift. Is this true?
I do. You're so right. You know me so well. iTunes reviews for my birthday.
You guys, listeners, I don't care if you're annoyed by hearing it all the time. We're going to keep saying it. And every podcast you listen to is going to keep saying it because it's important to us. It helps move the show along. So please go right now and leave one for Leslie's birthday. And you can even write, "This is for Leslie's birthday. I love you guys. You can steal that. It's fine. It's not trademarked.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. So we'll watch for those.
Yes. Yeah. And then we'll text each other. Yeah. We'll text each other. Did you see the newest one? So thank you guys for those who have done it already. And remember, if you leave one right now, it's still open. Our giveaway for a bundle of Leslie's new book, Mama Bear Manifesto, is out there. So all you have to do to enter to win is leave a review, which is free. So do it.
Yay! Okay, Tessie, so I have to say I had so much fun interviewing Liv for today's podcast. She has been a friend for years, and I have just loved watching her harness her mama bear in ways that is so encouraging to others, particularly those who are walking through a desert. She's specific to infertility, but really she talks about walking through an uncomfortable period. Her story really is amazing. She's had 6 miscarriages, a failed adoption, just the heartbreak. Oh,
yeah.
But she also comes out on the other side, and she uses her pain and the process that she had been through to encourage others who might be going through something similar. So I can't wait to get into the podcast. Listener, if you yourself have experienced infertility or loss through adoption, or if you simply haven't found yourself living the life that you kind of expected that you would, I think you'll really benefit from this episode.
I 100% agree. Liv is such an inspiration. She's upbeat and positive, not just in the podcast, but if you follow her on social media or anytime I'm back in the Quad City, if I say, oh, we just interviewed Liv or we're going to post Liv's episode soon, everybody knows her and everybody says, oh my gosh, I love her. That was the theme whenever I mentioned it, because she's so genuine. She's so real. And hello, she teaches yoga. I'm a big fan of that. And she calls hers holy yoga. I was intrigued by the way she kind of nurtured her other self while in the desert with this really interesting and beautiful practice that she can share with others. So listeners, in this episode, we think you're going to be fascinated with and just inspired by the way Liv leans into the pain she finds in this desert of waiting, the process she goes through, the hope that she finds through it, and the way she really talks about breaking and healing through self-care, writing, yoga, and the community she formed. So this discussion, like you mentioned, Leslie, and really Liv's book, because we both had an opportunity to read it, it's really not unique to infertility. It's for anyone who's found themselves in a season of waiting. So, I mean, I don't think it needs much introduction. I say we get into it, don't you think?
Yeah, let's jump into our conversation with Liv Ryan. We are so excited to welcome Liv Ryan to the podcast today. Liv is an all-around fantastic person. She's a wife, a mom to 3, a yoga instructor, a speaker, an encourager, and a writer who just published her first book, Bearing Hope, Navigating the Desert of Waiting for a Child. She is just an absolute sweetheart. And yet through the years that I've known her, I've seen the strength of her mama bear through her writing, through her presence, and just the incredible work that she does. So Liv, we are so excited to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I am pumped to be here.
So let's jump right in. The journey to your children very much shaped the narrative of your life and your book. So tell us a little bit about your family and how you arrived to this gorgeous little crew that you have today.
Oh my goodness. Yes, it has been quite a journey. My husband, Kevin, and I have been married for 8 years, and we have 3 beautiful children on earth. Our oldest is Colton. He's 4. Our second is Annabelle, and she is 3. They're 13 months apart. And then our little guy, Calvin, just turned 1 in June. So, whew, I have my handful. And they always do too with all my stuff.
Yeah. So I noticed just now you said you have 3 beautiful children on earth.
Yeah.
And that was really intentional. So I
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we started trying for a child about 7 years ago, got pregnant pretty quickly, and were totally shocked when we lost our first baby about 11 weeks along. And then I learned that miscarriage is really common. So they said, you know, don't be worried, it's fine. But then we ended up miscarrying our second baby and then our third baby, which kind of put me in a group of women that is really tiny, you know, that loses subsequent children, and they couldn't figure out why. So we started the adoption process at that point, and then we had a birth mama change her mind. So we went through a failed adoption, and I was just questioning, you know, am I ever going to be a mommy? I thought this is what I wanted to do. We continued trying for bio kids, and we had three more miscarriages. So we just went through such a dark, long season of loss, and we ended up adopting our son Colton first. And so that's just kind of how I entered into motherhood. Very different from the way I thought it would look.
Yeah. So Liv, as happens so often, at least for me and others that you and I both know, our writing mirrors our experience. So what was it like for you to walk through this journey of infertility and failed adoption without a companion like the book that you've written for others?
Yeah. You know, it was a really hard journey. I had faith in the Lord and I clung to that. And Kevin and I grew really close through that season. But I knew that I had this dream in my heart to bring about a companion guide, something that was inspirational, something that could walk with women through the darkness, through the, I call it fugly crying, you know, through the just like laying on my bathroom floor. Those times when you feel so ill-equipped to face what you're facing.
Okay, wait a second though. Fugly crying. What is this? Tessie, I feel like you're really good at this, but I don't even know what it is yet. So,
well, it's probably not appropriate to say it out loud, but it's just, you know, really ugly crying.
It's the F word that I'm so fond of.
Yes! Oh gosh, you guys.
Okay. I get it. Okay, thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, there's lots of like spunky words that I kind of made up myself in the book because I don't know. I'm just all about being who you are and not trying to make something so pretty when going through this isn't pretty. And so the book is just, I don't know. There's lots of different facets to it. It talks about grieving. It talks about mourning. It talks about how to enjoy that time, how to do fun and healthy things while you wait that are going to bring about, you know, life in your heart. Just help you survive that season. And so there's a lot of practical things and yeah, it's just a fun companion. That's the only way I can put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Liv, I don't know you. I haven't met you up until a few minutes ago. I read your book, so I probably have a little bit of a different perspective than Leslie just because she knows you so well as, you know, on top of the book. But one of the things, I too had a miscarriage, and I remember at the time, well-intentioned, well-meaning, sweet people were giving me like books to read about loss. And because like they were Christians and I was Christian, it was like super God heavy and didn't speak at all like me, because as we just mentioned, I do enjoy an occasional F-bomb, you know, and it was like, where are the books with this happening? Because when I had my miscarriage, I'm like, I don't really want to hear about God's perfect timing. I just want to hear about somebody else who survived this, who went on to become, we at that time had a son already as well, but like become a mom or had another healthy child. So I just kept thinking when I read your book that you were so relatable and that you were vulnerable, you were open, but you were also you're a Christian and there is talk about God and how you leaned on God, but it wasn't so heavy that you also didn't seem like you were just really ticked off that the whole thing was happening too, you know? And I thought that was really refreshing. And I think it's missing in this kind of subgenre of Christian literature.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm really glad that you felt like it was relatable. That was just my goal. I didn't want to vomit Christianese onto people. I wanted them to experience Christ. And what's funny is that I wanted this to be a mainstream book. I wanted to write a book that anybody could pick up and read when they're going through it. And it's called Bearing Hope because I really believe that whether or not you ever bear a child, you can still bear hope. But I was trying to kind of dance around Jesus. And then I was like, nope, you just can't. And the book just was falling apart, like a peanut butter and jelly without bread or something. Like, I just couldn't do it. And I was like, okay, it's going to be a Christian book, because that is the foundation. The hope that we have is that there is a day coming that there will be no more tears. And there is a day that our striving will cease. And I long for that day. But for the here and now, what do you do? And so that's kind of what this book does, is takes you on that journey. I just really hope that people can find faith again through this, because I know in these trials, it's so easy. I mean, in any trial, really, it's easy to want to just give up on your faith. You feel like there are no answers. And so I hope that through reading my journey and then the 14 other women's journeys who are in this book, that people can see, okay, I need to hold on. I need to take one more step.
I have not experienced miscarriage, but I did go through a very long adoption process. And so it's pretty amazing, Liv, that you've had these experiences and that you really come from this idea from so many different ways. And as I was reading the book, I was thinking about, you know, Tessie, we obviously we're sisters-in-law. We've been close for a long time. And I remember when you had your miscarriage and I didn't really know what to do. I wanted to do something. I wanted to give you something. And I don't know if you remember this, but I wrote you a poem about a cat.
Mm-hmm. I do. I still
and
have
I remember, you know, like I wanted to give you something in that time, though I couldn't relate really. And so I didn't quite understand what to do. And immediately with this book of Liv's, you know, I could relate to it as a woman who has gone through a long waiting process of bringing a child home through adoption. But I also was like, oh my gosh, this is something I want to have in, you know, my arsenal of mm-hmm. things that I can give to women that are moving through this, that I don't have the words myself. And so I can bear hope through Liv's experience and her words. So you have really young children. Mm-hmm. You and your really relatively short marriage have been through so mm-hmm. much. And you've written this book, which I just think is such a gift for others.
Well, it's a dream that I feel so called to. I know it's something that I was born to do. So I'm thankful I finally crossed the finish line.
So you write in the book, and I'm just going to read a little portion here. You say, longing for a child is like trudging through a desert. It's a long, hard, lonely journey. The outcome is unclear, and hope is often in short supply. But there is great news. You are not alone. There is hope. And I think the reader spends their time in the pages of this book just really struck, as you were saying, Tessie, by just honesty, just being inspired by your words and being able to relate to the stories of the women who have walked through the experience that the reader is likely sharing. It's sort of that mm-hmm. Me Too factor that we talk a lot about mm-hmm. on this podcast. You call the book an inspirational companion or a desert Sherpa, mm-hmm. guiding the reader through a journey of healing. And it really is. It's a beautiful resource for women. So what was it that was burning inside of you that just made you kind of have to produce this resource mm-hmm. for others?
Well, when I entered into that group of women who've been through that loss, like so many of us have, I realized just the hunger and the thirst for knowing how unalone you are. Mm-hmm. Because you feel isolated, you feel lonely, you're hurting, and you just don't really know where to turn, which is crazy because I have always had a really strong support network. And I think you were saying, Tessie, that, you know, you picked up books and you were just like, oh, this is so like heavy and sappy. And I just wanted something refreshing, like just the idea of water in the desert. That's what I wanted to provide to these women. Because when you're in the desert, it is dry and it is hot and you feel like it will never end. And so I just knew that that God was going to use me to create this for women who needed water in the desert.
Mm-hmm. I've wanted to ask, since I read the book too, that it was really clear, and you've mentioned it already, that you and your husband actually got closer in this process. Mm-hmm. But you know, in all honesty, like my miscarriage really was hard on our marriage because men up until like babies are kicking or babies are out and talking, you know, they just don't often have the same kind of connection. And that's a stereotype, you know, that's like a really big statement that's not true of everybody. And I understand that. But so how did you do that? How did you stay so close?
Well, we had been through kind of some church, I don't know, drama, if you will. And we had kind of lost some friends. And so I don't know if it was just the Lord knowing that I could not have survived that without him being a rock I could lean on through that. But I think it depends on the guy and his, I don't know, level of emotional desire or like emotional
capacity.
There you go. Yeah. And so I do think that it often takes such a toll on marriages. And there were so many times that he was just probably like, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure he wasn't starving to sit by me while I cried again and again and again. But I don't know. I just have to believe it was a God thing.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about life back then. So this is, I mean, it really is not that long ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this was what, 7 years ago when this whole journey kind of started. Mm-hmm. So what was just your everyday life like? Were you working outside the home? Were your friends all having babies at that time? Like, where did you look for strength? Where did you find sort of hope during those times as you were traveling through them?
Yeah. Gosh, it feels like a whole different world. I was working full time. And I had quit my job when we found out I was pregnant and I was getting really sick. And I was like, oh, I want to be a stay-at-home mom and a writer. I'll just quit now. Mm-hmm. So quit my job and found out about the miscarriage the day before my last day on the job. And that was kind of an oh crap moment. And we had told everyone that we were pregnant because that's what our group of friends did. Like you asked, were they pregnant or were they having kids? Mm-hmm. They totally were. I mean, left and right, just babies, babies, babies. And we were all so young and naive. And we just told people we were pregnant like the day we found out because we were so pumped. There was no holding back on that. So I had quit my job and I went through this season of, well, I was going to be a writer, but I have no energy. And so I kind of had a little moment of pressing pause in life where I didn't do much of anything. And then I was led to Holy Yoga, which is something I do now. And I've been doing it ever since. And I started doing that training program. And then I also started nannying because I had no idea what the next step was. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a crazy, I'm a free spirit as it is. So it just kind of kicked off my season of free spiritedness that has never ended since then.
So the grieving process for you, was it just a lot of tears, a lot of reflection? You know, where did you find that strength and hope and solace?
Well, we started church shopping about the time that we were going through the first loss. And one day, one Sunday morning, I just found myself weeping at this random church service because the service ended with, "You are loved." And I just was so desperate to know that and to hear that and to believe that. And so I think that segue into finding a small group at our church was just a God-ordained thing where I was able to find healing and find hope and find friends who would walk alongside me. I found one of my best friends through that small group and we started running together and she was going through infertility and it wasn't like candy coated. We could be our true selves through that. We could cry together and watch, I don't know, just go to acupuncture together and brainstorm together on how to survive. So friends, Kevin, church, the word of God, like opening it up, just desperate to hear truth. It was so many things combined and lots of trial and error.
I mean, isn't that always what grieving is? Just trial and error. Like, oh, crap. Totally. Sitting in my bed for 5 days actually didn't help. Let's try something else. Yeah,
exactly. That is spot on.
All these bad movies, all of these, they're not helping. We got to try something else.
Yes. Yeah. So you talked about how other women were your support system. And in your book, there are stories of other women who share their hearts included within the pages. And this was one of my favorite parts of the book, that you included these other stories, just because I think it helped round out your story so well, you know, because they all arrived at really the same place, this place of hope, through different avenues, right? So how did you find these stories, and why did you decide to offer others as a voice?
Yeah, well, early on in the process, when this book was just a thought in my head, I started asking for people to send their stories to me. I just, like I've said so many times already in this podcast, I was desperate to know that I wasn't alone. And reading other people's stories, and I remember one in particular, she referred to the child that she was carrying as her fourth, and she had miscarried number two and three. And I remember, and I could cry right now, just breaking down and being like, she's validating those lives. That was her second baby. Mm-hmm. He or she died. That was her third baby. And so I knew that was going to be really powerful. And I knew I needed to give a voice to these living, breathing hope stories that are all around us. And they don't all end with a baby. That's the beautiful thing about it, is right. that the hope and the joy that we have isn't in the baby bundle that comes mm-hmm. at the end of, quote unquote, waiting for a child or infertility. It's so much more than that. So I started a support group. 2 years ago, and or over 2 years ago now, and we would come together and these women would share their stories, and I would just weep, and I would just yearn for the day that they would feel that hope fulfilled or mm-hmm. that longing fulfilled. And so some of their stories are in the book. I gave an invitation to anyone in my support group who wanted to share their story to send it to me. And yeah, that's kind of how I started collecting stories. And then I realized there was a need for a story that didn't end with a child, right? Where they chose to live child-free. So I ended up using social media and just asking, hey, who knows somebody who has chosen to live child-free and who's doing it joyfully? Mm-hmm. And so that's how I found Lena's story for the book.
I love that. I love, you know, I think it's something that we sometimes, Tessie and I, we struggle with that, with that idea of being fulfilled by having children, and how mm. we don't ever want to give that message, even yeah. though we focus a lot on motherhood and mm-hmm. on moms. There are so many ways, as we would say, to engage your mama bear that's within, whether or not you've physically or in whatever way born a child mm-hmm. or bore a child. So I just think that's a really beautiful acknowledgement and just so important. It's a really important part of the story and of your process.
Mm-hmm. Liv, you mentioned your support group that also has the same name, Bearing Hope. Mm-hmm. And you talked about it as a way of like, this is really just what made me feel less alone, right? So did you start it? How did you find people to, you know, to be in the group? Where did you meet? How did it all come about? I'm asking this question mostly for people, if they are in this season of waiting and they are interested in starting something similar, like how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the support group started, let's see, right after we had our second baby, Annabelle, we knew that we wanted more children, and I was terrified. And I just didn't want to go through more loss without other people who understood. And so I honestly, you know, when you're in a season of grief, you kind of like blank out and like forget. So I don't know the details of how I actually started it, but I did probably just put something out there on Facebook and say, hey, I'm starting a support group. We're going to meet at Panera on the second Monday of the month at 7:30 p.m. And yeah, I showed up and I was nervous. No one else would. And one other girl showed up, one other girl who has now kind of become my cohort. She will lead if I can't be there, or she's just there to be another springboard. But she has not missed a meeting since. She lost her sweet first baby when he was a month old. So she had dealt with that infant loss piece. Mm-hmm. And every person just brings such a unique like their own unique story to the table. And so we just chatted and talked and cried and prayed together, and it was beautiful. And I was like, we're doing that again. Mm. So the second month we had three people, and we grew steadily one person at a time. And now we've probably have about 10 to 20. We've had 25 people show up before where we had to break up into two groups so each person could share. So I would say if you're wanting to start one, oh my gosh, yes, yes, yes. Like people need a support group for this. So just throw it out there on social media. Be brave. Just take that first step and people will come.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think there's something really beautiful about that example of like, okay, I don't see this happening anywhere, so I guess it's up to me. Like, I'm going to start it. If you have that sort of inkling of like, oh, I should do this, even though I'm scared to show up, even though, you know, I might be sitting there by myself, do it.
Yes.
Do it, do it, do it. So in the introduction of your book, Liv, you write about your wedding vows, and you say, you know, you were a little bit naive. You say you were 21. You looked at your groom in the eye with all of this expectation of what your life would look like together, and the very full expectation of having children, as if they would come without any sort of struggle. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really touching, very honest example of just that youthful hope and expectation that's so beautiful and so innocent. And I think we all have those. I mean, I don't know that we ever really know what we're getting into. You know, do we know anything when we're 18 or when we're 21? So this question pivots a little bit, Liv, but as parents, how do we embrace the innocence of our children, even if they're 21-year-old children, right? Growing or grown and standing up at this altar on their wedding day. Even though we might want to protect them from, you know, harm or hard times, or just warn them about that, how do we balance that with holding on to that beautiful innocence of childhood and young adulthood?
Yeah. This is such a difficult question. Because of course we all want to protect our children. That's the mama bear in us. Mm-hmm. We use that phrase when the claws come out, you know, we want to protect them from anything bad happening. But we can't, it's going to happen. This is a broken world. And I talk about that in the book, how, you know, this, it's just not going to be perfect. And I am a huge, like, I grew up really sheltered, really naive, really innocent. And I kind of still have that aspect of who I am. So obviously I can't speak to having a child at the altar. Our oldest is four, but oh my gosh, we are in survival mode a little bit. But, for example, like my daughter Annabelle loves to play outside naked. She thinks it's like free and fun. And I think it's adorable. And my husband errs more toward the side of just protecting and not wanting anyone to get like a creeper, you know, to see her. And so I think it's just finding a balance, like getting down on their level and just experiencing things with pure joy and with that childlike faith and innocence, and doing that with them so you can be there if they do fall and when they do fall. I think just living life to the fullest with your kids, and then when they fall, you have that relationship established where they will come to you in that hardship and seek your guidance and your wisdom and you're covering, you know? Mm-hmm. So that is just, if you have the answer to that question, please enlighten me.
Well, I got married at 20 years old, and I remember I was literally about to walk down the aisle and everybody had gone before me and I was bawling because I am just a crier. And my dad looked at me and he's like, Tessie, it's going to be okay, because you know how to work hard. And I was like, okay. I didn't get what he meant at the time, but you know, now almost 14 years later, you're like, oh, he knew that I knew how to work hard. So marriage was going to be okay. Mm. Kids were going to be okay. You know, like the hard stuff was going to be okay because he knew I had the energy and the power and the stubbornness to work really, really hard on something I believed in. I often say that with my kids is like, gosh, I know this is really, really hard, but you're going to be okay because you know how to work hard, you know, and you know how to do what you need to do to get through this. And I think that's another thing, is just like kind of empowering them to, you know, use the tools that they have inside them to use to get through it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, none of us sitting here in this conversation have children who are of the age to get married. However, I think it probably those burdens or that burden of like innocence versus being smart about the world, like we never really lose that, I'm sure. So I'm sure like, you know, your mom was sitting there on your wedding day and she knew like it's right. Like yeah. It's not a walk in the park. Yeah. And yet hard things are worth doing. And we just, yeah, I think, I don't know. It's a tough question. That's why I threw it at you.
Yeah. Yeah. The hard things are the good things though. They're the worth it things. And I think we need to embrace that beautiful innocence because it's so, the more life you live, the more hardship you experience. And like innocence is just pure and it's beautiful. And just, we just need to treasure that when it comes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the hard stuff, waiting, we talk about this a lot, the limbo, the, am I going to get pregnant? Am I not? Is this baby going to live? Is it not? Mm-hmm. All of that. The waiting is so, so hard. So what have you learned about this waiting? And we've all been there, whether you're waiting to hear about whether you got a job or whether you're moving across the country or, you know, all of these things. We've all been in seasons of waiting if you're an adult. Mm-hmm. So what has it taught you kind of about patience in general? And what has it taught you about just holding on to that hope in that period?
Well, yeah, it has taught me that it's freaking hard. That for sure. I am not a very patient person, I have learned, which I think made it extra hard. But I have learned the power of, this is going to sound so silly and probably unexpected, but the power of taking a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And with yoga, it's been such a gift to me because I'm not a patient person, but it forces me to stop and slow down and take a deep breath and take 10 and take 20. And that's a really practical thing that we can do. And I've even taught it to my little ones because they deal with waiting in the most silly ways. They're like waiting for their snack or waiting for dinner, waiting whatever for dance class to start. And so we take deep breaths together. And so I think that's something really small. And then on a deeper note, I tell people to find something that brings them to life. Like do something exhilarating, do something new, do something that feels so far-fetched and so scary, but you have this chance, you have this time, and you have this opportunity, and seize the day, you know, like use this time to do something that you couldn't otherwise do. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting for a child, well, you have a lot more time and energy than you will have when you get that child. Mm-hmm. So do it, just find it, search around. And I give a bunch of like practical, fun ideas of where to start. I mean, if you are married and you're waiting for something, I think that's a great time to experiment with your spouse and like do adventures with your spouse and travel and watch the sunset with a picnic and, you know, just really fun things that you may not have the opportunity to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And Leslie's house is littered with all the things that she chose to do when she was waiting for some Tayu.
I believe in project-based waiting.
Yes.
I love it. So one final note about the book. I remember, Liv, that we were in a writing group years ago together. And I think at the time you had just started kind of conceptualizing this book. And I remember being really intrigued about your passion to make sure that the book had this artful element, like this illustration. And your illustrator, Hannah Slay, is so talented. So why did you believe so strongly that there be an artful element to this particular book?
Yeah, well, I know you guys are kind of artsy fartsy like me. And a good piece of art can just take your breath away, right? Whether it's a song or a dance or a piece of visual art. And there's an author I love. Her name is Sark. Do you guys know Sark?
From you. I know her from
okay.
you.
Okay. So Sark is an author who handwrites her books and she has art throughout. And it's always been a source of encouragement and joy for me to read her books. And I wanted to create that. I wanted these little snippets of joy, just these little, a lot of the artwork in the book is like girls. Some look sad, some look happy, some are just beautiful. So there are these girls and I think that's just a piece of that relatability. You know, you just see this girl and you're like, Oh, that was nice. I liked that. Mm-hmm. That broke up the reading. I'm too tired right now. I'm just going to look at this picture, you know, because when you're grieving, you just don't always have energy. And I think artwork is something that will give you that energy and that spark. So it came to life the way I envisioned. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Liv, we talked about how you and Kevin kind of stayed rooted to each other through loss and through the weight. But even when I was talking to Leslie about getting ready for this interview, she was just like, oh, you just have to see them together. Like, it's just adorable. It's just, they're just the cutest. And you write about him that way too. You know, I loved some of the funny things you would say or how you would describe him. So even though you've lived through so much that really, frankly, tears so many couples apart, how do you guys keep your marriage vibrant and alive?
Well, we are firm believers in Tuesday night, date night. just date night in general. That has been such a grounding force in our marriage. And it's something really simple and something really practical. And we hold so darn tightly to that Tuesday night date night, man. People know, like, they don't ask us to come to a party. They don't ask us to hang out. We keep it really sacred. And so that is a way for us to connect away from the world, just face to face, whether it's over a cup of coffee or on a walk or really, we usually just go out to dinner and we have our favorite spots and we just treasure that time. I'm a talker, so he's gotten really good at listening. And I've learned also that I need to turn the table around and ask him questions too. We've just, like you said, made that commitment to work hard and to fight through the hard conversations or the things where we don't see eye to eye. I don't know, just put each other first after the Lord. I just cannot imagine life without that man. He is God's gift to me.
So I know you recently had a baby. I mean, within the last year, right? Mm-hmm. And then you also downsized your house. And I work with you at the co-working space. And so I just remember hearing about this and thinking, like, that's a big deal. Like, that's a big step to take. So tell us a little bit about why you did that and whether or not you're all settled in.
Oh, yes. The downsize was one of the best things we have ever done. And I just listened to you guys' podcast about the life-changing magic of tidying up. And I was tracking with you right there because I read another book. I can't remember the name of it. Just a little ebook on minimalizing. And I was so inspired by the idea of life experiences being the richness in your life, not the things that you own. God has just been stirring in our hearts, or had been stirring in our hearts, on that topic. And just the idea of traveling more as a family and becoming debt free. And so it took us, you guys, a year and a half to sell our large house. And that was a really difficult thing to stick with because I had to clean this monstrosity of a house pregnant. And like, we ended up pulling it off the market, having our third child, putting it back on the market. And it was a little bit, you're worried at first about what people will think, you know, will they think that we don't have money? Will they think, you know, whatever, all these fears of man. And then we did it. And we were like, this is the best thing we've ever done. Like, we just trusted the process. We trusted the timing. I wrote a blog post on how to clean your house super good and super fast, even if you have children. So we'll have to link that too.
That would be great. Yeah.
But so now we're in this new house. It's half the size and it's just a beautiful thing. It takes half the time to get it clean. We feel way cozier as a family. We're just in the same space. It's not tiny by any means. We could go smaller. We're not in the tiny house movement yet. But we're almost debt-free and settled in. That would probably be the elusive term of, like, parenthood. Like, settled in is just not probably fully happening. Mm. But we, little by little, have made each space inspiring in its own way. And it has been a blast. Like, I will advocate till the cows come home for downsizing all the way.
That's awesome.
Preach. Preach. We moved from Iowa to Michigan, and the house was smaller, and often my kids will go to, they have some friends who just like the houses are huge, and mm-hmm. they'll come back and be like, oh, our house is so small. And I said, I'll always say, well, you know who cleans those big houses, right? You guys. Like, yep. You guys would clean that. You clean this house, you would be cleaning that monstrous house. And did you really want that? And they all change their minds real yep. quickly when they realize it would come with added responsibility. So I hear you. I love not having so much space to clean and so much space to just fill with junk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
The clutter.
Yeah. It's a good life.
So Liv, I know you, and I know that you're one of these women who from the outside, you just kind of have to sit back and wonder, like, how does she do everything that she does? You do. You seem to have this boundless energy and this unwavering passion, and I love it. And I love being around you. And I know that for a while, for those of us who were like, how does she do it? How does she do all these fantastic and fascinating things? I know you were waking up really early in the morning, and I think I was even like, I'm going to be accountable to Liv, and I'm going to do it too. So do you still do that? Is that something that you're still practicing, like this getting up early? And I mean, talk about that, but also just tell us about like a typical day that you go through. How do you juggle all of these great things?
Oh man. Well, I mentioned that I'm a free spirit, so I have to have my hand in all sorts of things to feel alive and vibrant. Getting up early, I am a morning bird. I just love the silence and the quiet of being up before everyone else. Summer has kind of screwed up my children because they don't sleep ever. Okay, they sleep a little bit, but it's gotten a little harder to wake up early because they're going to bed late and they're waking up early too.
Oh, no.
So I am usually a 5 a.m.er. Now, this book launch has been challenging for me because I can't get more than 45 minutes in the morning before my kids are up mm-hmm. after I spend time in the Word and just drink my coffee. And so I've been staying up late too. I've kind of been burning the candle at both ends, mm-hmm. Staying up till midnight, still trying to get up by 6 so I can get a shower, make my bed, make me feel like I have a tad bit of organization in my life. But yeah, typical day is all over the place. I work all day on Mondays. We get a babysitter and I write and I edit and I work for the Quad City Moms blog. I'm like the editor for them. So I work that day, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, I just am a full-time mom. I try to just give my kids the best of me. I try to be a hands-free mama. I'm mm-hmm. definitely struggling with that, with the book launch, you mm-hmm. know, trying to stay off of social media when I'm with them. We have a little funny song that says, face-to-face, 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 to face-to-face, and we point to each other's faces, and we're like, it's really just me being like, I am going to choose to be here with you because you are little right now. And everyone says you'll only be little once. And it's just so hard for me to remember that. So we sing that silly little song. But yeah, we just, I don't know. I just experiment. I'm always changing things around and trying to feel fresh and new. And I do my yoga twice a week just mm-hmm. to ground me and give me a little bit of energy. But I don't know. Girl, I do what I do.
I have to agree with you about early mornings. Like, our Mama Bear listeners will know that I love early mornings and Leslie doesn't. So I have to always like suppress the test. Just today, I wanted to text her at what would have been like 5:30 in the morning Central Time yeah. to let her know a couple things about the podcast. But I was like, nope, so Tessie, be rational. She doesn't have children. Jake is not there. She's sleeping in. So I waited. I waited, aww. But I agree with you. There's something magical about those early morning hours. And I genuinely believe I get more done in those than I do the rest of the day combined.
Oh, sometimes. Yeah.
Well, I love the song that you sing with your kids, like just how intentional you are about that. And I do think that you just sort of have that gift. And, you know, we talk a lot about meditation on the podcast and yoga mm-hmm. and how that really helps you to live in the present moment. And mm-hmm. so I think, you know, when you are doing the task at hand and you're not distracted by 1,000 things mm-hmm. and you're able to kind of center yourself, you can get a lot done.
Yeah.
You know? So you make it look easy. Oh, gosh. You make it look so effortless.
No, I don't. My friends would be like, oh, she missed our coffee date. She forgot to write anything on her schedule. I just fly by the seat of my pants and I dabble and I have fun. And like you said, being present in the moment is the most important thing. So I just try my best to do that.
So we talk a lot about the mother self and the other self. And I think we've touched on this with your yoga, Liv. So let's talk a little bit more about that, because the type of yoga that you're doing, practicing and teaching, you call it holy yoga. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are other ways that you kind of nurture that other self, but let's talk about this particular way. So tell us about holy yoga and maybe just why you started teaching it to a wider community of women and moms.
Yeah, I think our culture is so rushed, and I fall into that 100%. I just try to stay busy, 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 busy. And when we lost that first child, like I mentioned, it was this pause, and I was forced to just sit for a minute and think about, what do I want to do, and what does God have for me? And so I stumbled upon this thing called holy yoga. And it was perplexing to me. I had always enjoyed yoga, but never was religious about, you know, going regularly. And so my mom told me she went to this class and it was Christian-based yoga. And so I looked into it. I jumped on a phone call, you know, those informative phone calls that always convince you to do whatever you're on the phone call about. And I ended up in this yoga immersion program where I was learning how to teach it. And then we went to a week-long retreat in Arizona, and I experienced yoga in a whole new way, just in a way where God could heal. I had gone through some negative body image, pseudo eating disorder days in college and high school, and God had really started to heal the way I viewed myself and my body and the way he made me. And so it was just this beautiful healing experience where I had this silence and this stillness to spend in prayer and to spend meditating on scripture, like you are fearfully and wonderfully made, you know, as you're moving through the poses and just recognizing breath as a gift, like a free gift that we all have access to. So I knew quickly that this would be something that I would never stop doing and sharing with women who need it so desperately. And there are a few guys who come to my classes too.
Great.
But yeah, I've been teaching ever since, and it's just been more of a blessing to me than I'm sure I've been to them. Like, it has been life-changing for me.
I love that. I am a yoga instructor as well, and I believe in that power. There's power in slowing down. There's power in recognizing your breath and what it's doing to you physically and mentally and spiritually, mm-hmm. all of that. But there's also power in just connecting with the people in your classes. And this is, I teach other classes too, like weightlifting, cardio. I mean, I do all of that, but there's something powerful about yoga specifically. And obviously yours is focused on, you know, something specific, but really just in general, there's power in the connection that can come with people moving their bodies. And yoga has a way of just allowing you to embrace wherever you're at in the moment. So that can mean physically, like you were talking about people with body issues, why yoga has been proven to heal so many of those is just like the poses are meant to show you that we're not all built the same way. We're not all made the same way. And that's what makes it beautiful. That's why yoga is so beautiful, because mm-hmm. each pose looks unique depending on who it is. And so, you know, I'm just such a huge proponent because of that, because it just makes you realize like, oh, I am beautifully and wonderfully made, and I'm totally different than that one person, but that doesn't make us any one better than the other. It just makes us different. And that's a beautiful thing.
I love that. It's yoga to me is grace. Like, just that inhaling joy, exhaling bitterness or unforgiveness, like just that inhale, exhale, like breathing in what you need more of, grace for yourself, grace for others, exhaling the stress and the things you need to let go of. It's just, I want to come to one of your yoga classes.
Same,
I don't get to enough.
Liv, it has been such a pleasure. I'm so happy we made this connection. I know that there are going to be so many listeners who either have walked through this themselves and are interested. Even like me, it's been 11 years since my miscarriage, but it brought back that back in a beautiful way. It still, you know, held space for how I was feeling then. So it was just wonderful to read it, you know, even though it was that long ago for me. So even if our listeners haven't dealt with that personally, they've been waiting, right? Or they know someone else who has dealt with infertility or loss in this way. And so I think it's just going to resonate with so many people. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I just know that this book is going to touch so many women. And I just am grateful for people like you who are giving space to artists like me to get the message out about, you know, the things we've been called to do.
Yeah. So the book is called Bearing Hope, Navigating the Desert of Waiting for a Child. Liv, tell us where our listeners can find you. Where can they buy the book?
My website is livryan.com. And you can find the book on Amazon.
Terrific. Well, we will definitely link that. You can find it in the show notes. But again, Liv Ryan, Bearing Hope, Navigating the Desert of Waiting for a Child. It's been so much fun having you here. Thanks so much, Liv.
Thank you.
All right, Mama Bears, today we dare you to bear hope. Whatever you're facing, whatever it is that you don't understand or are disappointed by, we dare you to bear the hope that peace awaits you. When you're grasping, be encouraged by the stories of those around you, the stories that end in a myriad of different ways, but that edge on the precipice of love. Those that end in babies and children after periods of infertility, desires fulfilled, or those that end in rich, full lives in ways that were never expected, but that feel peaceful and beautiful once realized. When you're walking through the desert, we dare you to summon the courage to put one foot in front of the other, live into your desires, find the good things, nurture yourself, and keep moving forward. It's so hard to see it sometimes, but can we just promise one another that there is hope to be had, that there is good in life waiting for you, that tears will dry, bodies will be restored, relationships will mend, and hearts will be healed? We dare you to summon and draw upon the strength that we know you hold inside of you, to bear hope and constantly work toward the basic and beautiful understanding that all roads lead to love.
Yeah, lead to love. So true. So listeners, like we said in the intro, don't forget about our book giveaway. Leave a review on iTunes and you'll be entered to win a bundle. We have yet to actually say what that is, but surprise!
What is a bundle?
A bundle of Leslie's new book, Mama Bear's Manifesto. It's available for pre-order on Amazon, and we know that you love the podcast. You'll love the book. So, you guys, it's Leslie's birthday too. Leave her a review for her birthday and pre-order the book. Remember, I'm your free PR person, so I can say these things.
Amen.
And you guys follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And because we are really cool and really up to all the tings, mamas, we're on Snapchat.
Snapchat.
Follow us there at Mama Bear Dares as well. Check out our website for complete show notes from this episode at mamabeardarespodcast.com. And you can find all of our shows there if you look on iTunes. They have only the most recent 50 probably, or at some point we'll just go to the most recent 50, but on our website you can see them all. A few weeks back we interviewed Mandy Arioto, the CEO and the founder of MOPS. It was such a great conversation. Her book is available, so check that out. And also, I just noticed that MOPS put out a blog post about sex. Did you see this, Leslie?
No.
Yeah, I was like, we already discussed that in an episode we called The Horizontal Tango, so you can check that out too. So give it a listen there, but you know, that's the best place to catch us so that you don't miss a Mama Bear moment.
That's right. We'll be back on Wednesday with a review of sorts of the movie Bad Moms. It'll be really fun. So until then, listeners, have a great week.
Have a great week.